This podcast of The Business is a production of KCRW Santa Monica at 89.9 FM, webcast at kcrw.com, and distributed by NPR.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Sony Pictures, presenting All the King's Men. Sean Penn leads a cast including Sir Anthony Hopkins. All the King's Men is in theaters September 22nd.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business? And you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really gotta rap and be all that. But prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
This week on The Business, a dozen reality TV producers threaten to change the balance of power between all TV writers and the networks they work for. We'll talk to one of the producers striking to become part of the writers' union. Then, in Hollywood, makeup is hard to do. But first, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. Stick around, it's The Business from NPR. We begin with the big news that despite Sumner Redstone's vow to never be beaten to the trophy again, Viacom appears out of the running to acquire still another hot web property. Reports surfaced late last week that Yahoo had swooped in with a billion-dollar offer on the table to acquire Facebook, the closest competitor to MySpace, after Viacom talks broke down earlier this year. The huge price tag illustrates just how sexy traditional media conglomerates find the skyrocketing social networking sites. News Corp bought MySpace for $580 million last year, and General Electric bought women's online network iVillage for $600 million earlier this year. With 100 million registered users, it's easy to see why MySpace is a natural place to extend the reach of a traditional media company. And unlike the last dot-com boom, companies like MySpace and Facebook have already proved profitable, signing ad deals with Google worth hundreds of millions. Elsewhere, Lionsgate will release its upcoming child molestation documentary without a rating after the film's trailer got a restrictive rating from the MPAA. Deliver Us from Evil centers on a Catholic priest who admits on camera he's an active pedophile given sanctuary by the church for more than 30 years. Now, because Lionsgate isn't a member of the MPAA, it can release its films without ratings, relying on individual theater owners to decide if they want to screen it. But if you want to see this film in your local theater, you better start seeing some Hail Marys. Finally, Flashdance and Showgirl screenwriter Joe Esterhaus's new book hits stores this month. Just one pearl of wisdom from an advanced copy of The Devil's Guide to Hollywood? Hide in the stall of a men's room in The Grill in Beverly Hills any weekday lunch hour and listen to the conversations to learn, quote, everything you need to know about Hollywood, end quote. Presumably, this accounts for why it's so hard for women to break into filmmaking. And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up later in the program, what would Hollywood be without makeup? But in a minute, America's next top models are striking. And so are their producers. Last Wednesday, the Writers Guild held a rally to ready the troops for battle over upcoming contract negotiations. Hundreds of writers milled about L.A.'s Pan Pacific Park.
Somebody called somebody who said, oh, by the way, I got a phone call about that job.
The union's leaders talked to the press.
Every piece of media, moving images on a screen or the recorded human voice, has a writer, and that every writer has a Writers Guild contract.
And yes, what would public dissent be without Twisted Sister? After signing in and having a Danish, and where would the labor movement be without Free Danish, a sea of writers in red union shirts sat down in the park's outdoor amphitheater to have their rabble roused. Phil Alden Robinson, who wrote Field of Dreams, started the speeches with a brief history of the writers' union. Early triumphs like pension and health care in the late 50s, missteps like forsaking home video residuals in the 1980s. The writers believe the next big windfall will be digital downloads. Ununionized reality show producers may be the key to milk that cash cow.
For the first time, hundreds of reality writers and editors representing scores of shows are taking the morning off work. It's a little touch of red flu has hit the reality business this morning, and they are joining members of the Writers Guild, screenwriters and television writers, to say that we are united in saying we want a good deal for all writers.
More and more, reality show producers are demanding to be treated more like writers. In the early days of reality TV, writers saw reality producers as the enemy. But now, the Guild is supporting them out of enlightened self-interest. Getting unscripted storytellers into the WGA takes away one of the network's key points of leverage in contract talks about who'll get what in the digital age.
It is well to remember, as we approach the beginning of a year that leads up to negotiations, what the studios said to us in the last two negotiations. Go ahead and strike. We'll just put more reality on TV. We'll take basic cable programming and put it on network.
But it's reality, you say. There are no writers. Why should reality producers be in the writers' union? Kai Bo is one of the 12 producers from America's Next Top Model who've been on strike for union representation for almost 3 months. Kai Bo, welcome to the business.
Thank you.
For people who have no idea what a reality show writer is, explain it, if you would. That there's even a writer on a reality
right.
show seems anathema to some people. Describe, if you will, how a reality TV show like America's Next Top Model, where you work, or worked up until you went on strike, works.
Okay, sure. And obviously that's one of the main questions that comes up. They're like, wait a minute, I thought it's reality. And the thing about reality is that reality is boring. And this is reality television. And television has to have beginning, middle, and ends and characters, and it has to be exciting. And each show is different, so I'll only speak for America's Next Top Model. But we work in two-person teams, and we look at about 250 hours of raw footage, and that's the footage for a week of filming. From that footage, we first draft an outline of a story that we would create for that episode that we're working on. Once the outline is approved, then we begin the writing process, and we literally are taking lines of footage and placing them into a written script.
So if I understand you correctly, you are sort of writing using sentences that have already been spoken.
Exactly. It's totally post-production. We're not ever feeding lines to the girls. We're not ever, you know, saying, put them in this situation and then make so-and-so push so-and-so. We never do anything like that. But what we are doing from a really, really large pool of choices, we are making story decisions. Sometimes, because our show is a competition show, there are certain aspects of it that repeat every week. Every week there's a photo shoot. Every week there is a teach of some sort where the girls learn some new technique.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. By some professional. So it could be an acting professional. It could be, another model who has a certain talent or capability that they're sharing. So, and every week at the end of the week, a girl is eliminated. So we're looking at what is the most interesting and entertaining way to tell this week's story so that by the time, you know, the credits are rolling, it's satisfying. Either people are really happy that, you know, whew, so-and-so made it through one more time, or they're upset like, oh, my God, my favorite person got kicked off. I didn't see it coming, but it's fulfilling.
Tell me about your why you are on strike. This is week 9 of a very ugly dispute between producers and writers on this show. What is at issue here? Is it money or is it time?
It's neither, primarily. And I'll just give you a little background. We are the first reality writers to demand to be represented by the Writers Guild of America. And the Writers Guild has agreed that they will represent us. So this is something that is very standard in our industry. And it's something that is being denied the writers of reality television. And we're not the only people that have been denied, but some of the newer genres are also have had to go through this. When animated writers started, whether it's The Simpsons or Family Guy, they absolutely were not covered by the Writers Guild. And yet they're writing every single week, just like any other scripted show. So that's really what's at issue, just the right to be unionized.
So what is it about America's Next Top Model, about the way the show is put together, such that the Writers Guild thought this would be strategically advantageous to pick this show to take a stand on as opposed to any number of other reality shows?
We are the first reality writers who unanimously said that we wanted to be unionized.
How many of you are there?
There are 12 of us. we felt and still feel that we were in a bit of a different position in that we're a show that is in its seventh cycle, moving into its eighth cycle. So that's not common for a lot of reality shows. A lot of writers have been working for America's Next Top Model for seven seasons or six seasons. So it's people who know each other as opposed to a lot of freelance writers who come in for 3 months and leave. So we were a little more cohesive than the average group of reality writers. But again, it's not that we were special or the chosen ones. We just said that we'd take a stand, and we did.
Take me inside those discussions, the 12 of you.
What brought us to a point of even speaking with the Writers Guild is that one of our writers in particular had been active in the organizing committee. And it really started with the person who was in the organizing committee asking if we wanted to just have a breakfast with a member of the Writers Guild. And, of course, we were like, nothing wrong with breakfast, you know.
Who doesn't like pancakes?
Exactly. So we went to the breakfast, and once the conversation really progressed, they saw that all of us were very interested in being in the Writers Guild. And, again, getting simple things like health benefits, having a salary minimum so that there's at least a minimum standard of payment and that we aren't at the mercy of, well, do you want it or do the other 100 people who want your job want it? So once they saw that we pretty much unanimously were interested in representation, they asked how we felt about just them sending a simple letter to our bosses saying that we wanted to be represented by the guild. And we said, that sounds fine. So that happened. And
how does the news get broken to your employers?
Well, the letter went to our employers, and we didn't hear anything back from our employers. So we're back at work and just, you know, kind of waiting to hear something. And the first thing that we did hear was by way of the Writers Guild that they were not willing to go into a negotiation process.
That's a bad sign, right?
Well, it was an early start of maybe this is not going to be quite so easy, even though, you know, we love our bosses. They supposedly love us. And also our editors had been unionized the previous season. So we thought, well,
they're now part of IATSE, which is the international.
Exactly.
It's one of the largest craft union in the world, really.
Exactly. So we had no reason to think that, you know, even though it was a request that had not been made, and it was definitely a standard that we wanted to set in the industry, we really didn't have any reason to believe at that time that our bosses were against unions. The second step that we took was to draft a letter ourselves saying that the 12 of us wanted to be represented by the guild and that we wanted our production company to go into negotiation with the guild on our behalf immediately. Once we submitted that letter, we were called into Ken Mock's office. He's one of the executive producers, and he was actually in New York at the time working on another of his shows. And he called us and he said, you know, first, guys, this is a little awkward. I'm not going to be able to have any casual conversation with you or any personal interaction. I have to read a letter from my attorney. So that was sort of sign number two that this was serious. And he basically read a letter saying that although they respected our right to be in a union, that they were unwilling to go into a negotiation with us and that we should go through the NLRB process, mm-hmm. which is the National Labor Relations Board process, and the formal bureaucratic way of getting union representation.
Which would also be a way that would take probably years.
Yes.
And by then, probably America's Next Top Model will be applying for Social Security.
Exactly.
And not going down a catwalk.
Yes.
Not without a walker, maybe.
Exactly.
So if you're not after more money and you're not after better hours, what is the real advantage to unionizing for you guys? 12 angry men and women.
12 Angry Writers. Well, I don't want to say that it's that money and better hours are not a factor. They were not our motivation, our prime motivation. But they are definitely something that is guaranteed in a union contract or that is negotiated in a union contract. The first thing is, yes, as reality writers, we are putting in the same hours as fiction writers and getting paid probably about 1/7 of what they're making on a good day.
Really?
Yes.
Can I ask you what a writer on America's Top Model makes?
Anywhere from $900 a week to, I think, about $1,600. But I really, I can't guarantee mm-hmm. that. But in the alternative, fiction writers, under union rules, they can't make less than something like $3,000 a mm-hmm. week for what we're doing.
What is the strike doing to the show? Is this show in danger of not happening, or will the CW, which now owns the show, go to scab labor?
Well, as far as we know, the show is going on. And with a new network, with, you know, owned by CBS, it's unlikely that they would, you know, let their show fall to pieces because of us. However, we're not there. We are a missing component. And so there is definitely a quality that is missing. To our knowledge, new writers have not been hired for the Cycle 7, which is the cycle that we began to strike during. To our knowledge, the editors were asked to continue editing what we'd already produced. We'd already written about eight and a half scripts out of 12. And so there's sort of a seasoning that happens to episodes once they're written. And the editors were in charge of finishing that process. But again, they had the majority of scripts already completed. So we know that the first 8 to 9 episodes are going to be great because we wrote them and we've been writing them for, you know, some people for years. So there's no doubt about that. We do feel like the quality of the remaining 4 episodes may not be up to the same standard, but I'm sure that they're doing whatever they need to do to at least get by.
I mean, sort of the one ace in the hole that networks are able to say they have is that if the fiction writers get too naughty and asking for too much, we can always go to reality television.
Exactly.
And that's not possible if you guys succeed.
Exactly. And that led to the popularity of the genre during the past negotiations. And negotiations are, again, going to be on the table in about 8 months. So this is something that we've sort of gotten caught into. It started with 12 writers against our boss and very quickly became 12 writers against CBS, against the entire industry. And one of the messages that we're sharing with people is this is so not about us anymore. And so because of that, we really do need other people to step up. It's not just reality writers, though it concerns all reality writers, but it's also the fiction writers because, you know, in 8 months, they're not going to have a leg to stand on in their negotiations if we're not part of the Writers Guild.
Kai Bo is an associate show producer on America's Next Top Model. Kai, thanks for being on The Business.
Thank you so much.
Kai Bo is one of 12 producers on America's Next Top Model who've been striking for representation by the Writers Guild. An important note, we called her bosses for comment, and they have not returned the call at the time we're taping this show. Of course, there'd be no top American models without top American makeup people. We'll talk to one of them after a short break. You're listening to The Business from NPR. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business. Without makeup and hair people, our beloved celebrities would look like mere mortals. Joanna Schlipp is one of the folks that makes sure that we are never, ever confronted with such a faith-shattering sight. She's a regular on Oprah, so you know she's got to be good. Her clients include stars like Eva Longoria, Scarlett Johansson, and Sheryl Crow. Joanna Schlipp, welcome to the business.
Thank you.
What is the mission statement for a good makeup person?
To make your client bring out the best in that person that you possibly can, the best version of themselves.
So who are the Tom Hanks and Tom Cruises and Julia Roberts of your field?
As makeup artists, there's so many different areas. There's fashion, and then there's celebrity, and there's movies, which, and the three rarely cross over. But fashion now has merged with celebrity. So it used to be the fashion makeup artists that were, you know, the ones that everybody wanted to be. And right now, I would say that would be Pat McGrath. She's one of my favorites. She's very avant-garde, very, you know, out there.
Explain the distinction. What's the difference between fashion and celebrity?
Well, when a model sits in front of you, she literally is a canvas and has no opinion. You meet with the editor and you talk with the photographer about what the lighting is going to be, what the clothes are, and then you do whatever you want. When you're working with a celebrity, they may be known for a certain look, and they do have an opinion. They will speak up, and maybe she's known for having red lips everywhere she goes. So that's one difference. The other difference is that it seems to me that when you're doing French Vogue, there's no question, if you're on that job, that you have the ability to perform. And when I came to Los Angeles, I found that some of the most skilled artists weren't necessarily the ones that work the most. When you're doing celebrity, the personality is so important because you're usually getting them ready on a day of press, or and they may need from you to calm them down, or they may need from you to make them laugh. So I think that personality plays a huge role. I think there you do have to have skill, but personality, I would say, is 50% of the job with celebrity.
Do men, is the approach different?
Men get grooming. They get made up more than you would imagine. And I've even had it go so far lately that I've had a man ask me for individual false eyelashes, which is a very difficult thing to do on women as it is. And it's a very strange request coming from a straight man. But the fact that that was requested, like, kind of blew me away.
Did he provide a basis for this particular fetish?
He just said that he liked it and was into it. He liked the results. But I was like, who initially put them on you? Was it like a joke in the makeup trailer on your movie that you know? I don't know where it came from. It was very odd. I mean, I did what he asked, but it was, and it was funny for me, but I thought it was unusual.
Hair and makeup people tend to have, I think, what could be safely described as special relationships with their star clients.
Well, I mean, when somebody sits in front of you, they're very vulnerable because they've got a naked face, and so they're kind of in one way telling you everything. And when you're touching them, you're physically touching them. So I think that also breaks the barrier right off the bat. And I think hair and makeup people in general are very good at being able to read someone right off the immediately. They're very good at that. So they know how to either relax someone or excite someone, or because you're the first person that they are in contact with before the shoot. So you're responsible for getting them into a good mood, into a good, you know, headspace. So, you know, it's kind of that responsibility.
Do they see that as your responsibility as well, that you're not just there to do my – I can get anybody to do my hair?
Personality plays a huge role because there are so many talented people. And I think that, you know, every individual – want something else around them. So maybe somebody wants someone who's extremely quiet because they want to be able to focus. Somebody wants someone who's going to make them laugh in order to take their mind off of what's going to happen throughout the day. So that plays a huge part in not only the pitch of the agent selling the artist, but the actual relationship with the artist and celebrity.
What can makeup do and what can't it do?
Makeup is the original form of airbrushing. It's the first, I mean, you literally can transform a face pretty much. And then we depend heavily on lighting as well. Because when you get into doing transformation, obviously, if it's not lit well, she'll just look like a drag queen.
Does it make it harder to work on a face that has been Botoxed and lifted and stretched? Or is it actually easier for you?
It's easier.
It's easier.
It's easier,
that's
actually
the dirty secret.
Yeah, that's easier. That's the dirty secret. It's easier.
Easier to paint on a tight canvas than one that's flopping around.
There you go.
Okay. With Us Weekly and every other incarnation of it, is there greater pressure to be made up all the time?
Absolutely. You know, if you go on Robertson, you know you're going to be photographed. I think most people are aware of that. If they're shopping at Kitson or eating at the Ivy, they're going to make sure that they look good. But
that's
if going
a sort to, of extended runway. So
yeah, but if they're going to some obscure place, you know, I don't think they worry about it.
Mm-hmm. So there's a sort of tacit agreement that if you're on a certain street, mm-hmm. you should expect, you know.
Paparazzi.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
You smear yourself with tuna and jump into the tide pool of Hawaii, you're going to attract sharks.
Exactly.
What's the difference between doing a TV show versus doing a film or doing just still photos or a red carpet?
They're very, very different.
Because the lighting is different in every
right.
case.
And, you know, television is usually you're making the person, depends on what character they're playing, but normally you're making someone look normal. Movies, if you're doing a movie like Chicago or Geisha, Memoirs of a Geisha, then you can really show, you know, your skills. But again, you're doing the same thing probably day in, day out, day in, day out. If you're doing print, you're doing something different every day because it's a different girl sitting in front of you every day. It's a different cover you're doing every day. It's a different spread you're doing every day. Different clothing, hair, everything that inspires you is different. And for red carpet is completely different because you have no control. Once the celebrity leaves, you usually go to their house to do them. Once they leave, they're usually in the car for about an hour to 2 hours. And then once they get on that carpet, it can be extremely hot, like it was at the Emmys. And they'll be on the carpet for 2 to 3 hours. And so they could be literally melting if, you know, there's so much lighting on them. And so you may have to overcompensate with the amount or the lack of there because you don't want it to change throughout the conditions. And then once they get inside, if they're presenting, you know, you fill their bag full of stuff to touch themselves up, and you hope that they do so, but you really have no control at that after that point.
I want to ask you, you've worked with fairly experienced, I think is the polite way of saying it, actresses.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking of Kim Cattrall, who's a knockout.
Knockout.
But is also over, shall we say, 40, and
yeah.
I think over 50 to be.
No, I think, I don't know if she said 50 yet. I think she's pushing 50.
Pushing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in any event, doesn't look it.
No, at all.
But how is it different working with, shall we say, mature women actors than with the fresh ingenue?
I don't, you know what? Thank God the women that I'm around are super secure. I've been fortunate because I've heard stories. There are many, many stories.
You got to tell some.
No, you're going.
Okay. You're not leaving here.
All right. Well, I'll tell
one.
You this story. First of all, when I went with the agency that I'm with now, Cloutier, they asked me. There's a list. They said, "Who's on your list that you don't want to work for?"
And I there's was a like, list.
There's everyone. Every artist has a list. So, and I said, I just moved to LA from Europe. I said, I don't have a list. I said, but let me look at everyone else's list. And so. There was a few names that were on there repeatedly on everybody else's list, so I just added them to mine because I just thought, why have a bad day, you know?
Life's too short.
Yeah, life's too short.
You got to tell me who's on the list.
I can't.
You got to tell
cannot.
Me. Rhymes with?
Rhymes with first name?
Sure.
I'll just say Gina, and that's it.
Joanna Schlipp, thanks for being on The Business.
Thank you for having me.
Joanna's just come out with a new book filled with beauty and empowerment tips for teens called Glamour Girls, the ultimate step-by-step guide to great makeup and girl smarts. And that's The Business. Matt Holtzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna and Thea Chalin. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com, keyword The Business. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with available real-time traffic alerts. More at acura.com/RDX.